Hello and welcome to Cricket Tonight. India have gone out of the semi-final and the West Indies have gone through. And we'll be covering that game in today's podcast. Today we'll also be covering that big semi-final, what India could have done to win that game. Having a look at the New Zealand and England game, the women's semi-final and the upcoming final, as well as reading out some of your questions that you've sent through. So thank you everyone for sending emails through to us. If you'd like to get in touch with us, cricket.tonight6@gmail.com, and that's 6 the numeral. So please keep sending your emails. We've had some good questions come in. And then we'll go through and talk about the big game, West Indies and England, the World T20 Grand Final that's happening tomorrow night. But before I do, I'm Pralab Gupta, your host of Cricket Tonight. Across in India, in Bangalore, we have Amit Srivastava. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm here.
That's good. You are here. We did have some technical difficulties dialing in a conference and army across India, but we've solved those and he's back on board. Happy to talk about the cricket. In here in Melbourne, I also have Gov Krishnan. How are you today?
I'm surprisingly in a good mood. You know, I thought I'd be much more devastated after an India loss, but I'm in good spirits.
You're in good spirits. And I think the West Indian team was also in very good spirits after the game. There's actually a video circulating of them when they rocked up to the hotel and airport, walking out, singing the champion song and dancing in the lobby. So it was a very good game of cricket. Gov, what was your thought during that game? It's India, West Indies, a big game of cricket. I'll just quickly run through an overview of what happened, just to refresh everyone's memory. I know some of us want to go, that game never happened, but to be honest, it was a brilliant game of cricket. India ended up making 192 for 2 in 20 overs. Rohit Sharma finally clicked, hit 2 sixes in a row, ended up with 43. Ajinkya Rahane was in the team, he made 40. And Virat Kohli once again continued his dominant form, making 89 not out, with Dhoni chipping in with 15 at the end. From the West Indies, they lost Gale very, very early with Bumrah bowling him out. But after that, you ended up with effectively the Simmons show, who made 82 not out of 51 balls. And also Russell, who came in with a 43 off 20. Earlier, Charles actually made a good solid 50 to set up the West Indian innings. And West Indies ended up going, I guess, effectively winning in the last over off hitting a ball for 6 off a Virat Kohli full toss. Now, Gov, let's start off with the actual game and the team selection. India made 2 changes. 1, Shikhar Dhawan was dropped for Ajinkya Rahane. And 2, Yuvraj Singh was injured and in his place was Pandey. What were your thoughts on those team selection?
Look, I think India made the right decision there. For too long, Dhawan has had rough patches. And just before he's about to be dropped, he scores a 40 or a 50, and that somehow saves him. I think he's one of those guys that Dhoni keeps backing, so that's why he's in the team. I don't think Rahane is a great 2020 player. He's had some good IPL seasons, but I think he's more of a test player or maybe a one-day player. Pandey, I think in his debut match or his second match, he had an incredible game against Australia. So I'm always in support of him getting selected into the national sides. In terms of this game, I found it a very strange game because I thought India's undoing would be a batting collapse. You know, we've seen the brittle batting lineup being exposed a couple of times this tournament. But they made 198. You know, Virat Kohli had another incredible innings. He scored about 87 or 90 runs off, you know, not many balls. And after they posted 198 and Gale went out cheaply, I thought this game was over. But I was really impressed by the West Indian players. I mean, they were fearless. You can see it in their eyes. They weren't overawed by the occasion. They brought their A game. And Lendl Simmons just comes into the team and scores. And I know a couple of times he was caught on no balls, but all he can do as a batsman is take advantage of the opportunities you get. And he definitely did that.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And let's talk about Simmons a bit. So he only came into the team due to an injury. In fact, he was actually injured before the tournament, wasn't picked. We had an injury in the semi-final, and then he comes in. And what's really fascinating is he actually plays for the Mumbai Indians in the IPL, and this is his home ground. The Wankhede Stadium, where that semi-final happened, was his home ground. So we actually knew it inside out, knew the conditions really well, and it was a brilliant selection for the West Indies.
Yeah, there was something about the way West Indies were playing with so much confidence. Like, I think even if Lendl Simmons hadn't played and it was Andre Fletcher, West Indies would have still won this game, you know. Johnson Charles started off the attack. You know, he scored a quick 40 or 50. You know, and West Indians batting lineup, They have so many aggressive batsmen. And that's part of my problem with this Indian side. I mean, their 2020 team seems very similar in structure to their one day team. And it's almost like they're treating it like the same type of game when it's a very, very different game. I think Indian batsmen are too conventional. And even though their batting is still effective, I think they could take a leaf out of West Indian's book and select a team that is more 2020 oriented.
Yeah, it's a really good point because you've got two different schools of teams, right? West Indies are all about brute force. They hit multiple sixes in their innings. India, I think, had a few sixes there. Virat Kohli, a brilliant batsman, but very conventional, as is most of the entire Indian team. And I actually agree with you that you need a combination in T20. And India, for me, actually took the foot off the accelerator. Yes, they accelerated in the last four or five overs. But there was a time period when I think Rahane and Kohli were batting together where they could have gotten a few more runs. Now, having said that, I don't actually blame Rahane. There's been a lot of criticism of his innings. You look at the balls he faced, it was really no different to what Rohit Sharma did at the top of the innings. But I do think India should have actually put the foot on that gas earlier to actually go for a 200-plus or 210 score, which would have made that run chase that much more difficult.
It's almost like Kohli and Dhoni have their favourite players and they say, this guy must be in the team. And all of a sudden you put Yuvraj, you put Raina, Dhawan, Rohit Sharma, and there's no room for anybody else. So I think Dhoni, if he stays on as captain, and Kohli as well, they should be open to bringing in new players, especially after this World Cup. There's not going to be a major one-day or 2020 tournament until the 2019 World Cup. So they should really think about giving young new guys an opportunity, because I'm a firm believer the Indian domestic scene has a lot of young talent that we haven't really seen at the national level yet.
Yeah, certainly agree. And it's an interesting pitch even. Like, this is one of the flattest wickets in India. There have been multiple big runs scored. And I'd actually go, that change that we made with Manish Pandey coming in, which was actually four pre this game, but reflecting on it a bit more, when you have such a flat pitch in India's batting lineup, the reality is they didn't end up using any of their batsmen. Suresh Raina didn't come in, Pandya, Manish Pandey, for example, was in the team, didn't end up playing. It could have been the option to perhaps bring in like a Negi and give him an extra bowling option instead, but that's all about hindsight. The second key piece that occurred was India lost the toss and weren't chasing. And there's big dew factor that kicks in the second innings. And that certainly impacted the bowlers. So as an example, Ashwin was again ineffective. Jadeja was finding it tough to grip the ball. And what Dhoni had to do was rely on his pace bowlers, which is why Virat Kohli ended up having to bowl two overs because none of the spinners could actually bowl the ball properly. Now, what were your thoughts in the second innings, Gov, about how sort of the bowlers bowled? And would you have done anything differently in terms of an Indian bowling perspective, apart from not bowling any no balls?
The only two bowlers that were effective were Bumrah and Nehra. You could tell after the first two overs that you would really want to bowl them during the last few overs of the innings. And I was very disappointed in Dhoni's decision to give the ball to Virat Kohli in the 20th over. Nehra was bowling great. He had a couple of loose balls in his last couple of overs, I understand that. But you want your most experienced player who's played international cricket for 15 years, you want him to bowl your final over, or Bumrah.
I'm going to jump in there. I actually don't agree with that. So I thought the 20th over, Kohli was probably the right call to make based on who he had available. But what needs to happen is when you've got four or five overs remaining, you usually bowl your best bowlers out before that final over.
Because that's
where the pressure comes in. You can't have a situation where Virat Kohli, Jadeja bowls, for example, two or three overs left, because those overs are the big overs where there's lots of runs scored off them. So you end up with the final over not having enough runs to actually be safe.
I don't think there's any excuse to bowl Virat Kohli, who hasn't... I don't know the last time Kohli's actually bowled in an international game or a domestic game. And he bowls half trackers
at
100 kilometres per hour.
The reason he came in was because it was due and the spinners weren't able to grip the ball and Ashwin was struggling. So that's why a pace bowler had to come in.
Well, we saw the result of Kohli bowling in that final over. I mean, it wasn't even close to a contest. He was bowling half trackers. And I would have gone with Ashwin. I mean, I know the whole dew factor, Ashwin wasn't effective, but Ashwin at the end of the day is a guy who's picked up hundreds of wickets. Kohli just doesn't cut it as a bowler. I mean, you might as well give the ball to Dhoni to bowl a final over.
Yeah, that could have been an interesting... He could have actually used himself with a seam-up option.
No, but Ashwin,
it's a good comment on Ashwin, right? So Ashwin is the leader of India's spin bowling attack. Had a really good World Cup so far. But you look at the semi-final and the game against Australia, he did not bowl out any of those two games. Is it a case that Ashwin hasn't lifted in these big games?
He shouldn't be in the 2020 team anymore. He's
I think that's a bit harsh on the back of
people are overlooking the fact, because he's so effective in tests, he's a good one-day bowler, but if you actually look at it game by game, he gets absolutely tonked. Jadeja was extremely consistent throughout his tournament. He had a great Asia Cup. He didn't have a great semi-final against West Indies. I'll be the first one to admit that. But Ashwin has really sort of, I wouldn't say gained a reputation, but it started becoming the norm for him to get smashed around a little bit. And I think post-World Cup, they need to look into giving guys like, you know, Negi or maybe even Akshar Patel an opportunity. Because Ashwin doesn't really bring it with the bat in the 2020 format. And, you know, for me, he doesn't really bring much to the game.
Yeah, certainly Akshar Patel would be an interesting inclusion in the squad. I'm not a big fan of him, but I actually don't disagree. Sorry, I don't agree with the view that Ashwin should be, I guess we should look on to move on from Ashwin. The Asia Cup, for example, Ashwin dominated that series. Ashwin had a man-of-the-match performance in one of the four games he played as well. But what I do agree with is that he hasn't lifted in the big game. So I'm going to go back to the semi-final. Like, he was one of the bowlers of the tournament in the ICC World Cup in 2011 in Australia. You look at his performance in the semi-final, got hammered. You look at the performance in the game against Australia, which was a virtual quarter-final, he got hammered. You look at the semi-final, he got hammered. And I have real question marks to whether he's entering into AB de Villiers' category or not being able to lift for those big games.
That's a big call to make.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Ravi Ashwin, do you think he struggles in some of those big performances?
So, one thing that I just want to mention about Ravi Ashwin, in that semi-final, he's always struggled against Australia. Australia is a team that always targets him.
Good point.
So, you have to take that into account when you're talking about the time of the special semi-final. In terms of whether we are conditioned or not, the last time, I definitely agree with God. I cannot remember the last time Kobe has bowled in any form of the game. I don't understand why Tony would give the ball to Virat Kohli. He's not even a part-time bowler. He's maybe at one of the end of the lines. They're usually with the good channel or someone. He bowls a bit more than Virat Kohli does. And Kohli was really bowling really badly. He bowled one over when he got a wicket. And everyone's talking about the golden round. Like, that was a blatant toss that went down the boundary, I believe.
Exactly. But he only go for 3 runs that over. So his actual over was quite good that he bowled. And I think that last over, what it came down to was we only had 8 runs to defend. Because the over before went for about 14-15. That was it Nehra or Bumrah bowled? We had 2 or 3 fours off that. And you ended up with 3 overs in a row. That actually went for lots of runs. So instead of 8, you're defending sort of 14-15. You end up in a slightly different situation. And unfortunately, we weren't
That's
playing.
Not true. I mean, you sort of final over. You got hit for, like, I think, whether it was consecutive sixes or you got hit off 2 sixes of free balls, there's absolutely no way you can excuse bowling Kohli in the final over.
No, I agree with that. I actually don't agree. So I think Kohli was the right option to bowl in that last over. The only other option was Ashwin. And the way he was bowling it, he would be hit for, you know, 2 sixes in the first 2 balls.
No, but the point I'm trying to make is that you can't just look at the final over in isolation. You got to look at the 15th over, 16th over, and you got to see Bumrah's record as, you know, he's an incredible depth bowler. He has really gained that reputation. Compare Bumrah to Kohli.
So how many runs did Bumrah go for in the second last over?
Okay, are you comparing Bumrah to Kohli as a depth bowler?
No, not at all. Bumrah is a far better depth bowler. But it comes down to who was the only option available for that last over.
Okay, you're missing your point. Armie, I think you wanted to add to this.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I won't give a lot of credit to the West Indies because they kind of gave Dhoni the false hope that Virat Kohli can get a wicket or can, you know, be an effective bowler. It was a good plan. It was a good play by the West Indies.
Yeah, really good point, Armie. Like, I think we've kind of ignored the fact that, like, West Indies are a dominant side this tournament. They lost to Afghanistan. Really? And that was only on the back of a few players being rested and playing some poor cricket, which Afghanistan did well in. But I don't think we have given the due credit to the West Indies. We all talk about the two no balls that India bowled, Simmons getting a chance. There was a catch at the boundary where Jadeja touched the line as he caught it. But you look at the Indian innings. Virat Kohli could have been run out 3 times at the start of his innings. They had, you know, different chances given out to different players. The reality is that was about equal. So on balance, I'm actually happy with the West Indies winning, and you could actually make an argument. They were actually the form team coming into this game. India struggled and got into the semi-final due to a choke by Bangladesh to lose 3 wickets off the last 3 bowls. They beat Australia, they beat England. They beat Pakistan, and they got smashed by New Zealand. The West Indies effectively annihilated most of the teams they played, barring a dead rubber where they played Afghanistan. So I think we should give due credit to the West Indian team.
What changes would you want to make to the Indian squad moving forward?
Hmm.
Well, okay. So one thing I wanted to say was, from what our listeners and myself, you should all go back and listen to our first podcast of this World Cup series.
Because, pretty embarrassed to do that,
I
actually.
All of us said one thing was that this is a perfect 30 team, and we were all very wrong about this. So I guess changes would have to. I would want quite a few changes to the current squad. I probably don't agree that Ashwin should be excluded from the squad. I still think he's a premier bowler, and he adds the experience you need, especially in subcontinent. So that's one thing I wouldn't do. I would probably say it's the end of the line for Rainer. He didn't come in with much form. He got dropped from the ODI squad recently, and his only hope that he had left was for the T20 squad. And really, he's following that performance, batting all the time. And you just can't have that with the number 5 and number 4 batsman. He was very shaky throughout the whole tournament. I'd probably get the Yuvraj Singh as well. He had a very courageous and good performance, but at this stage of his career, really, that's when they're going to be the captain. I've been in the team for a long time. So that's three changes I would make in regards to batting.
Army, just a quick question. What would you say about Shikhar Dhawan? Would you keep him in the squad?
Yeah, Shikhar Dhawan was a tricky one because last World Cup, the PGL World Cup we saw, he was such an inspirational batsman, so dominant in a lot of ways. So he won that game against South Africa, was where he won 3 plus or something. That was incredible. So it's hard for me to just say drop him straight away. And that kind of batsman that is actually super T20 game because he's got the ball and so I'll keep him in the squad, definitely. But his performances are not consistent.
Yeah, thanks, Sammy. And look, I broadly agree with in terms of Brenner. I think it's the end of the road, Yuvraj Singh. Let's kind of move on to that seam bowling or the all-rounder position. Gov, what are your thoughts? Hardik Pandya, is there someone like a Rishi Dhawan out there? Jadeja, would you keep him in or would you look at Negi or other options? And then probably the third question is MS Dhoni, would he stick on or not?
I think it's time to give Negi an opportunity. I think Ashwin hasn't really performed in 2020s over the last 6 months or so. I think he was the weak point in his bowling attack so far this tournament. So I'd give Negi an opportunity. There's other spinners out there. Iqbal Abdullah, Akshar Patel. India have good spinners. As far as the all-rounder position with Hardik Pandya, I think he's grown a lot in the last couple of months. I mean, we've only really been seeing him at the international level for the last few months. And I think he needs to sharpen his bowling. Even though he's had good games in terms of stats, like he's had games where he's picked up very full wickets, it always seems like he's on the verge of getting smashed because he bowls a lot of half trackers. He's not a guy, I don't think anybody will call him a tight bowler. So he needs to work on his game. I would still give him more of an opportunity. I would still put him ahead of Rishi Dhawan, but I'd put Rishi in the squad because if Pandya sort of hits a spot of bad form, I think the next best all-rounder on the list is Rishi. Ashish Nehra, I don't know what his decision is post this World Cup. He's 36. He was probably the pick of the Indian bowlers this tournament, or very close to it. So I'd still give him a shot. But Shami is back. India has some other good pace bowlers that are coming up as well. Bumrah, to me, is one of the best depth bowlers in the world. So it's interesting how I say there's a lot of flaws in this bowling attack. But to actually find the change they have to make is a little bit more difficult. So summing up, I would give Negi an opportunity and I would put in a couple of other young bowlers in the squad who could get an opportunity if some of these more experienced players slip up a little bit more.
Yeah, look, it's a good point and I broadly agree. So from the way I look at it, the squad coming in was actually pretty good, but the next World T20 is in Australia in 2020 and you need to move on the players who won't be there. So Ashish Nehra for me, you know, has a great tournament, really good, he's back in the team. But I'd move him on from the T20 side. And from a bowling perspective, Hardik Pandya, I agree on your comments. He is a bit loose. What I think he will enjoy, though, is foreign conditions, because he actually bowls back of a length and short deliveries, which are an issue in India. But I think outside India, that line and length is actually quite decent. So it'll be good to see how he goes. Onto the comment on MS Dhoni, right? So that's a big question, because a journalist actually asked him whether he was retiring in the final press conference post the game, and he invited the journalist over next to him and sat him down, kind of like how Santa has a Guinness lap at times, and asked him a question, you know, do you think I'm not fit? Do you think I should retire? And he gave the indication that, you know, he probably wasn't going to retire. My view on MS Dhoni is he's one of India's greatest captains that's ever existed, but he will not be around in 2020 for the World T20, and I'd have him retire from T20 format. ODI, we've got a Champions Trophy next year. I can kind of understand if he wants to stick around for that, but from a T20 perspective, I would actually have him retire from this game. Gut?
So when you say you'd have him retire, if he doesn't want to retire, would you, as a selector, would you say you better retire right now, you're going to get dropped? Because that's a big thing to say to one of, you know, Indian cricket's biggest icons of the last 50 years.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be an unfortunate situation, kind of like if he chooses not to go on his own terms. Like, he's kind of read the writing on the wall with Test cricket, went on his own terms. But someone like a Ricky Ponting, and even Sachin Tendulkar to an extent, there were unofficial reports that he was effectively told he won't be guaranteed selection in the next series. I would say that from an India perspective, you'd almost go, we're now looking to build on from the next T20. We've got an IPL that's coming up. Let's look at the players and how they're performing there and start bringing some of them in and blooding them early. Because the reality is, T20 cricket, you play 3 to 4 games a year. And that's, you know, maybe 20 games maximum from the Indian team's perspective before the next World T20. Why not start giving these players who might be there a chance now?
I agree with a lot of the points you're making. Unfortunately, I don't know if the Indian selectors will follow your advice, because we saw with the one-day team, after the World Cup, it didn't really change much. The bowling had a few adjustments. The batting is almost exactly the same, apart from Pandey. So hopefully they take your advice and make a few changes. I like the thing about Pandya I was getting at before was that even though he has his flaws in this game, I just love the attitude he brings. And that's the sort of attitude the West Indian players are bringing. They're very aggressive, very confident. And guys like Raina, guys like Yuvraj, like, even though they contribute every now and then, they're sort of prehistoric at this point. You know, I sort of feel like the game's passing by. It'll be good to bring in guys with young, raw energy. And India have a wealth of that talent.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think it'll be an interesting selection the next time the selectors get together. Which actually leads us to the question of a coach. Right? So Ravi Shastri had a contract in place. It expired at the conclusion of the World T20. Right now there's a subcommittee. I think Sourav Ganguly, Lakshman, and I believe Tendulkar are on that subcommittee. And what they've said is they're going to look at the next coach of India. Ravi Shastri may be an applicant for that process, maybe not. But Ami, what are your thoughts on this? Who do you think should be the next coach of India?
Well, I think Ravi Shastri has done a pretty decent job. I mean, he's had his ups and downs, but he's had a little presence in the media, which is what we haven't seen from Indian coaching staff or management staff for quite a long time. So I'm not sure what he's like in terms of, you know, cricket tactics or what he actually offers in sort of the more daily coaching duties role. But I do believe he would be a good option for coach. In terms of other coaches, I'm not really sure who's sort of out there right now. Maybe we can bring Gary Gerson back, because he seems to bring a lot of good luck to him.
The thing about Ravi Shastri, I'd say is that I don't really know how he acts behind closed doors, but I know in his comments to the media, he is too positive. Like, he doesn't criticize the Indian team enough, and that's sort of reflected in the selection. I don't think they're tough enough on guys like Dhawan. They aren't tough enough on guys like Raina. And I think one thing India needs to change, if not many immediate changes to the squad, they should be willing to have a shorter leash on players. If a guy doesn't have a good couple of tournaments, despite the fact that he had a great tournament 2 years ago or a great World Cup 2 years ago, they should consider moving on from those players. And that's why I feel if somebody, a younger coach like Mike Hussey, I don't know if he's willing to take the job. Or a guy like Vivius Lakshman. I mean, he's a guy who's part of the selection committee. I think he could bring a lot of positives to the Indian team as well.
Yeah. Look, it's a good point. I think it's also important to give credit to Ravi Shastri, right? So under his leadership, he took it at a time period where India sacked their coach, were performing really poorly, but they regained that number one test ranking. They went into an ICC semi-final for the World Cup, and they've also gone out in the semi-final for the World T20. So from a results perspective, he's actually done quite decently. But But going forward, I too would look at refreshing the team, and that comes from not just a coaching perspective, but a selector's perspective and also a captain perspective, and looking at Virat Kohli as a T20 captain. Even someone like Fleming, I think, would be a good option. Very interesting to see if he'd be happy to take it. Like, he has the support of the players, done a great job in the IPL with the Chennai Super King, and also as a consultant generally out there in the wider cricketing community.
One final point that I forgot to make about proposed changes to the Indian squad. I think they should now officially make Virat Kohli the opening bowler. Apart from that, yeah.
Yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see whether he makes it. But then I think under our new selection policy, look at dropping him if he gets smashed and ignore his batting completely.
Yeah.
I think it'll be an interesting time for India. We've got 4 years till the next World T20. It's in Australia, so it'll be good. We're all either here at the time, so we're looking forward to covering that as well. But let's move on from this game and talk about the first semi-final, New Zealand and England. New Zealand, undefeated side, go in there, have had a really good tournament so far, probably the team of the tournament, made 153 for 8, and then you had England chasing it down, only sort of 3 wickets down, on the back of a Roy 78 not out. Ami, your thoughts on this game? What was your, I guess, if you had to, going into this game, we're all going, New Zealand are going to win this. How did you see that game pan out?
Well, firstly, I don't know if anybody or any of the community predicted that England coming into the semi-finals at all. I think we picked them, but it was always sort of a question mark as to how they perform. So credit to England, seriously. They've come from under the radar and they've really shown themselves. New Zealand, on the other hand, were dominant throughout the entire season. And one thing that England did in the semi-finals is that they didn't pull New Zealand back from a really good start that they had in the last 16 to 20 overs. I think I was reading somewhere that was the best performance that England had at the depth following. That's terrific from England's point of view. So in terms of, you know, the game, it was a good game. I was quite surprised at how easily England chased it down. One thing I do want to mention is that Ish Sodhi is seriously a good bowler, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how he grows over the next few years. He's got great big spin, and he's been the ball of wellness. And I think England, or New Zealand, have been looking for a spinner to come and take over the reins from Daniel Vittori. So it's great to see that Ish Sodhi, who was actually tipped by Vittori, is going to come and make some progress in the New Zealand team for years to come.
Yeah, look, it's a good point. It was, to be honest, it was a good game of cricket. Like, it did go down to the second or third last over. The comment I'll make is Roy 78 not out. So it was some brutal hitting. But whenever I've watched Roy, I get the feeling he's going to get out at some point. Because a lot of his shots, you know, we often say that Chris Gayle doesn't have a lot of technique and bludgeons a ball. But I'd actually say that, you know, Roy is even a step worse than that. So whilst Chris Gayle's a brilliant batsman, Roy, to me, just looks like he's going to get out every ball, but somehow I see him, you know, miss time hits, go for 4, 6, etc. And it'll be interesting seeing kind of what happens in that final. You had a comment on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one comment about the England current team and playing like Roy Ailes and Moran Ali. India could actually look at the England team and take more inspiration from what they're actually doing, because they have actually transformed their team from being a, you know, conventional one-day/T20 team with one or two, you know, specialist T20 players. So just having specialist rules everywhere. You don't see Stuart Broad or Jimmy Anderson or Alistair Cook in the T20 teams anywhere. We see players like Plunkett, like a hit deck. We see Riley, who came from nowhere and he was swinging the ball, which is great to see. And of course, Hales and Roy, I don't know if they feature any of the other teams for England, but for this T20 team, they're excellent.
I think overall it was a good tournament for New Zealand. You know, Sodhi and Santner had good tournaments. They didn't really pick their best fast bowlers because it didn't really suit the conditions. And that really shows the versatility of the New Zealand squad. It was good to see they performed well without their captain, Brendan McCullum. I thought they would really struggle without him. So there were definitely a lot of positives moving forward. And you know, in future tours to India, now that they have Santner and Ish Sodhi, you know, they might be able to hold their own.
Yeah, agree. It was a good game of cricket. And I agree with you, Ami, entirely in the comments on England. India can take a lot of inspirations. There was a time period where England struggled to make big scores in ODI cricket and had that conservative mentality, but they've completely refined it. And their entire teams plays with sort of aggressive cricket model, kind of very similar to what New Zealand did about 2 years ago under Brendan McCullum as well, ahead of that 2011 World Cup. So it'll be it was a good tournament overall from New Zealand. They'll be really disappointed for having lost that game, but I think they'll learn a bit from there. Now, let's move on from the semi-finals and talk about the women's semi-finals. We had Australia versus England, where Australia made 132 for 6 in the first semi, and England actually were cruising to victory and ended up choking and only ended up on 127 runs. So Australia through to the grand final. In the second semi-final, New Zealand, and this is an interesting parallel, right? Undefeated team coming into a semi-final loses to the West Indies by 6 runs. And it's a fascinating parallel, because that's exactly what happened with the male New Zealand team as well. And West Indies got through to their first ever grand final. So I'm actually really looking forward to the grand final. Australia's into their fourth successive World T20 final. Key players Lanning, who's been in sublime form and a pleasure to watch. And from the West Indies, Taylor's been really good. And my tip, look, Australia's been out there. They've won quite a few World Cups. I would love to see West Indies, the women's team, hold that trophy. So I'm going to go with that and say West Indies will win it. Gov, who is your tip for this game?
I'm going to tip West Indies. I think they're playing, they've had a good tournament overall. And the thing about West Indies is that they've gone so far from 6 months ago when they toured Australia and they absolutely embarrassed themselves. And hopefully this, playing well in the women's tournament as well as the men's tournament is really going to bring about changes in the cricketing structure. And hopefully, they can turn their fortunes around in the one-day game and the test game as well.
Yeah, agree. And it was good reading comments from Taylor just talking about the influence Darren Sammy has had, the male, West Indian male team captain, and how much sort of, I guess, how they've worked really closely together to get better, as well as the under sort of 19 World Cup and how they kind of built up some of those younger talented individuals and getting them into the world team. So yeah, it'll be an exciting World Cup final coming up.
That's a good point. Like, there's a chance that they've won the men's World Cup, the women's World Cup, and the under-19 World Cup. So they're kind of dominating world cricket in the way.
That's right. Just need to see it translated to test cricket. But it'll be good to see the West Indies dominate cricket again. It's been too long, 30 years in the making, for the West Indies to come back. Now let's move on from that and have a check-in with our email. So we get quite a few emails from all our fans, and it's absolutely great that you support us. If you're interested in sending us one and appearing in potentially our final podcast after the World Cup final, send it through cricket.tonight6@gmail.com. That's cricket.tonight6@gmail.com. Keeping to the women's theme, we have a question from Megan in Australia, who says, thanks for talking about the Women's World Cup during your podcast series. What are your thoughts on whether women cricketers should be paid the same amount as male cricketers? Now, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? So in kind of international sport, like the example I'll give is tennis. The Grand Slam tennis players, both the females and the males, share an identical prize money, irrespective of whether the male sport has 5 sets versus a female sport has 3 sets. Do you have any comments on kind of whether or not the women's players should be paid, I guess, paid the same amount as the men's?
The first thing is I'm really glad to see women's cricket being turned to the public more and getting more exposure. And that's great. It's really great to see. The problem with the comparisons when you start comparing with tennis, especially, is that women's tennis itself is a huge sport, a huge industry that generates a lot of money in every tournament. So for all the Grand Slams, there's a women's tournament, and there's a huge crowd for that. And it's not like women's cricket where there's, not even like 1/10 of the crowd. There's leading games, leading men's games, women's games. That's one thing that sort of makes it hard to sort of, pay the, Indian women's captain the same as MS Dhoni gets paid, because he draws in a lot more of the crowd. He draws in a lot. I'm not saying that they shouldn't get paid from a personal standpoint. I'm happy if they get paid. But in terms of the structure of things, I don't know how any money would come from it. Say the West Indies themselves barely get paid any money for playing
Yeah, really, really good point, Army. Gav, do you have any comments on this topic?
Well, first of all, I don't think the women should get as paid as much as men in tennis. Men play best of five sets versus women who play best of three. You know, and there's more interest in the men's game compared to the women's game. But we'll go into that in more detail into our other podcast called Tennis Tonight, which you can catch on Problematic soon. But in terms of the cricket, yeah, I don't think it's really comparable. The men's cricket has a lot more interest, obviously, and I don't think it should really be a conversation for right now. Like maybe in 10 years, 20 years, as you know, there's more attention and more following to the women's sport. But the women's sport is really growing now, and it's great to see the game more attention, but it's not even close.
Yeah. So, look, I think that's an interesting statement. I kind of see it as, if I keep that tennis comparison, what tennis does in each of the Grand Slam tournaments, women are paid identical amount to men in terms of all the prize money and that championship money. But for all the sort of world tours and other non-championship tournaments, it is different. So it depends on how much drawing power you have. So I kind of see it as, it comes back to what we've talked about in earlier podcasts. Who is the ICC, the International Cricket Council? And their I guess, mandate is not purely to grow the game of cricket for those 10 member countries. It's actually to grow the game of cricket as a whole for both men and female. So I'll actually look at ICC tournaments, or even the way they look at the revenue distribution and sort of giving a guaranteed sort of distribution from the ICC towards women's cricket. And they've been making good progress on that, right? Like this tournament's been really good, where lots of double headers, and I think even from an advertising perspective, lots of TV games being advertised from a female's perspective. But I'd actually look at the ICC overall to kind of come in there and effectively subsidize women's cricket in order to promote it and build it over, similar to what they do with the under-19, similar to what they should be doing more in the associates. I look at sort of translating that through to the men's and female components. So thanks for that question, Megan. Appreciate it.
I think, you know, to bring more attention to the women's game, they should have a thing where the last place in the men's competition plays the winner of the women's competition or something. I think they need to be innovative with those sorts of matches or those sorts of games to really, you know, grow the women's game even more.
One thing I would love to see, the West Indies women cricket men in the World Cup and West Indies male team in the World Cup, they should make one Super Shot Line team. West Indies team, the West Indies male team, and the women team. That's just one super dominant team. It's just win all 15 games.
That's a good point. They probably will do really well, given how good they are at this format. So moving on to the second question, we have a question from Manzoor from Pakistan. So thank you for tuning into our podcast from Pakistan. And his question is this, you know, I'm really disappointed with Pakistan's exit from the World T20. And I've actually read reports of all the, I guess, reports the coach and the performance manager have said. And what they say is that the Pakistani cricket unit wasn't as professional as it needed to be. And Shahid Afridi was a bit of a clueless captain. What needs to happen for Pakistan cricket to go forward? Ami, what are your comments and thoughts on that question?
Yeah, a lot of sort of comments are coming out about Shahid Afridi. Shahid Afridi's always been a controversial character, always been a bit of a question mark. He's got people that love him ridiculously, and the people that really don't like anything he does. I am sort of on the fence as a captain. I'm not the biggest fan of Afridi because even in this World Cup, some of the decisions he made really sort of questioned me. For instance, he dropped Mohammad Hafeez from batting in his own position, batting down much lower in India when he scored 64 recently in the game. Shoaib Malik came in against the India game and he played really well, but he came in much too late. And there's a lot of things about decisions that he made which really sort of which makes me question what he does. His style of batting itself is sort of, like you could say, if you compare him with someone like Brendan McCullum, who's also a very extremely aggressive batsman to the front, you would say the sort of demeanor is completely different from what McCullum does to what Afridi does, even though they bat in a similar way. Afridi seems a lot more reckless at some of the times and less inspiring as a captain. So I don't think Afridi is the right choice as a captain. For the Pakistani team, I think almost like he's been put in the Pakistani team and captain because there's no one else, which is a shame. So I'd like to see in the next 4 years, when the next World Cup does come, it'd be great to see, you know, new Pakistan, new man team, it's more consistent performance. Some of the players are just way too inconsistent. Players like Umar Akmal and a lot of these openers they have just come in for one game or two games, have an average of 20 or 30 and make their way to 50 or 100 games. They need more consistent, better quality batsmen, especially.
I'm not a big fan of Shahid Afridi as captain, but at least he didn't bowl Umar Akmal in the death over when Pakistan were playing. So, you know, every captain has their flaws, put it that way. The thing is, if you drop Shahid Afridi as captain, who steps in? That's a big question. I don't know many players within the Pakistan batting lineup that have cemented their spot. You know, there's no star player right now. And that's a problem for Pakistan cricket. I know it's very, unusual for a team to pick a bowler as their captain, but I think they should start looking into that possibility. Shahid Afridi is not the answer. You know, he's in his late 30s. He's too inconsistent. He's making these stupid comments like he's making all the time. It's time to move on. Who that person is, Pakistan really need to look long and hard. I'm not sure if Mohammad Amir is ready for that. Just a few years ago, he was in jail. So maybe to go for a more steady option, Wahab Riaz, somebody like that.
Yeah. Look, I'll talk more about what I think Pakistan need to do now. And it's just one word, professionalism. The fact that I can read a report that the coaches submitted to the Pakistani Cricket Board in a newspaper just strikes me as, you know, crazy. It's a private confidential report that the coach has done, the performance manager has done, that somehow every copy is available across every newspaper. And that to me strikes as, you know, the issue with Pakistani cricket. They simply aren't professional enough in everything they do. When it comes down to the training, they're unfit. When it comes down to the fielding, they don't spend enough time in the field. And when it comes down to actually making changes, the PCB also unprofessional. So for me, the Pakistani focus is cleaning it up from an administrative perspective, fixing the PCB, making them into a professional unit, and having those standards flow through to the batsmen and the bowlers, right? If you do not meet the fitness standards or you keep breaking team rules by going out and doing things, you are out of the team. That doesn't matter if you're Mohammad Amir or if you're Umar Akmal or the best player in Pakistan. Those rules apply to everyone. And until you achieve that standard and they have that level of professionalism going through, Pakistan will go nowhere as a nation and cricket team.
I agree with that. And it's a similar point to South Africa, which I know is a whole different issue. South Africa's issue is, you know, they choke in big tournaments. What they should do to change that is pick a coach that has a proven track record for coaching winning teams. That's what they have to do instead of keep coming up with these South African coaches who bring the same things again and again. And in the same way, I think Pakistan should bring a coach who has a proven track record of winning and being professional. You know, whether that's a guy who's coached Australia in the past or, you know, somebody like Wright who coached India to many big wins. Somebody who's experienced and has a proven track record with other teams of delivering that level of professionalism and winning.
Yeah, so I think it comes down to, it's a two-way street. So Pakistan have tried foreign coaches, local coaches. In fact, Waqar Yunus used to coach Pakistan, and he made a recommendation which was near identical to what his recommendation right now was, that Pakistan needed to be professional. So for me, it comes down to the players simply do not respect the authority and senior figures enough, and they're not empowered enough to make decisions. But we'll be watching Pakistan really closely, because they're a really talented team, particularly the test team, Babar, Misbah-ul-Haq, really excited watching them, and I'm really hopeful that there's changes made to the structure of Pakistani cricket that will let them develop and realise and fulfil their potential, because they're an exciting team to watch. Now, thanks for that question. Let's move on to previewing the big game. The West Indies and England, it's come to the end of the tournament. I think it's safe to say none of us predicted that this would be the World T20 final. And we have the red-hot West Indies, fresh from beating India in a semi-final, as well as England, who have chased down over 200 runs against South Africa before, meeting in Calcutta for this final, a jam-packed crowd, lots and lots of support. And I imagine all that support will be for the West Indies, because they're almost like everyone's second favourite team, so I think they'll enjoy a lot of that crowd support. Gov, from a West Indian perspective, who do you think needs to fire for the West Indies to win?
I think you asked me the same question before the Indian game, and I said Gale has to score for them to win. He didn't score, and they won anyway, which is a huge positive for West Indies. there's something inevitable about this West Indies team. Like, it just seems right that they're going to win this tournament. They have supreme confidence. They beat the best team in the tournament in the last game. Everything just seems right. They had luck on this side. So I'm going to pick West Indies. I think Gale performs. I think Simmons and Johnson Charles and just running through the batting lineup, they have so many confident, informed guys. And even the bowling, you know, I've been a fan of Andre Russell. Budrie has been a revelation this tournament. I know he's been around for a while, but he's really, for the first time, stood up as one of the best spinners in this form of the game. So I'm going to go with West Indies. Whether they bat first or second, I'm going to back them.
Would you make any changes to the West Indian team?
Unfortunately, Andre Fletcher is injured. If he's healthy, I haven't really seen the status update there. I will put him back in the team because he was one of the highest run scorers for West Indies this tournament. Apart from that, I'd keep the same team.
Okay. So moving on, and that's West Indies for UCUP. Moving on to England. Ami, from an England perspective, what needs to happen for them to win?
Well, it's going to be a great game, I think. But England has been a great team in the tournament, as I've said before. And this will be a great game to watch because it's one team that's just, you know, people don't really debate the West Indies like they should, as you mentioned before. And no one really expected England to be here. So it's not your typical situation where you have one favourite and one team that's sort of up and coming, like we had at the last World Cup, where it'd be like, maybe Kuala Lumpur did win, but they were back in Australia. So this is more even, I feel. I think I might back England in this game, just because they surprised us at the whole tournament, and I think they can do it again. In terms of who needs the fire, I think in terms of batting, I think Joe Root, if he can stay in throughout the innings and good innings and sort of bat the way he does, then they have a great chance of taking it away. I think Morali is crucial because he provides that balance with bowling and batting. And from a bowling point of view, I think Wiley, who's had a great tournament so far, if he can continue sort of swinging the ball like he has and bowling fiercely like he has, then England have a chance in this game. Just as much of a chance as West Indies do.
Yeah. Look, it'll be a really exciting game. So I think Gov's gone West Indies, Army's gone England. And for me, it often also comes down to the location. So you've got Calcutta, which is traditionally been quite slow. The pitch has been very slow. The spin has come into it a bit more. And I'm leaning towards the West Indies winning that game. I think it just comes down to the confidence. I have confidence in West Indian batting lineup from kind of like from 1 through to 8, 9, that they can actually score runs. England, they do have some really good players and they've chased down big totals, but it's been on the back of their top order performing. If you look at the game against Afghanistan, there were 6 down. They had some contributors towards the bottom, but I don't have that much faith in the, for example, number 5 or 6 for England to score down runs than I do in the West Indian equivalent side of it.
It's ironic that you said that because Windy's lost against Afghanistan too.
It's a good point. And it'll be a good rematch, right? Because the English team were absolutely taken to the cleaners by Chris Gayle when they met in the group stages. But England are a good team. If they're batting clicks, they'll post a big total. They're both teams enjoy chasing. In fact, I think both teams would like to bat second, as you would in general anyway, given the dew factor that hits in India. But I'm going to go with West Indies to take out the double, the female World Cup and the male World Cup. And I'll be really excited to see the celebrations that happen at the end of it. And it'll be, I think, great for West Indian crickets to win that game. So we'll be back after the World T20 final just to review the tournament and talk about that exciting game. Gov, do you want to talk about how people can get in touch with us? Okay, so why don't I do it instead of Gov? I thought he'd like to talk about our fan mail, and because he does get the odd email that comes addressed to Gov. Effectively talking about Rishi Dhawan, and that's about it. But if you do want to get in touch with us, please reach out to cricket.tonight6@gmail.com. You can download us on any Android player. You can download us on iTunes. Hit our Podomatic page. Please talk about us. Give us feedback. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back in about a couple of days' time just to close out this tournament, which has been a really exciting tournament.
Time for cricket tonight.
cricket tonight.